Red Dwarf, Season 7, Episode 1, Ticket to Ride. Starbug. For the first time in RD history, we have a full Pretables teaser. From black, the screen fills with kaleidoscopic swirls which resolve into a picture of Lister, rotated 90 degrees, Lister present, standing.
Hello. Testing, 123. Hello.
POV changes back to normal and we see Lister examining a portable camera lying on its side on a bench. He gives the camera two taps.
Yes. Well, here we go.
Lister picks up the camera and holds it out in front of him, pointing at his head. He begins to walk through corridors.
Ship's Locker 1. I've decided to keep a journal of life on board ship and send it off in a probe. Since turning 28, I feel a new maturity about myself. In fact, I can't even remember the last time I tried to urinate on Rimmer from the top of D-Deck. No, wait a minute, Friday. But apart from that one lapse, comma, maturity-wise, I'm practically up there with Abe Lincoln and Moses. Now, just recently we came across a craft, piloted by ourselves from 15 years into the future. We had a bit of an argument, and they attacked us. See attached.
Lister taps buttons on the camera. Cut to scenes from out of time.
Another lock.
The comms channel barks.
Incoming message.
The screen resolves to a picture of the future Rimmer. Note that the tone before a person after this point represent that they are the future version of the character.
Either you give us access to the data we require, or be prepared to be blasted out of the sky.
Large script chunk edited out of TTR the ultimatum, discussion and decision to fight, the Dwarfers' successful opening rounds end, as Lister fires the lasers, the first shot from the future crew which caused the feedback loop that detonated the panel in front of him, killing him instantly. A second hit destroys Cat's station, blasting him backwards to fall over Crichton's panel.
Cat!
Cat, but there may be a...
A third hit rocks the bug, and the complex equipment behind Crichton's head overloads and explodes. Crichton slumps backwards, lifeless.
Crichton, Crichton!
Rimmer, in soul-consuming shock, scrambles over to the motionless mechanoid, his hard-light hands grasping Crichton's shoulders, unable or unwilling to accept the truth.
There may be a what question mark away out of this. Is that what you were gonna say? Speak, Crichton! How can we change what's happening?
Through his despair, an idea hits Rimmer, but from his expression it is impossible to tell what he is thinking or feeling. He turns and stumbles from the blasted cockpit into the midsection, somehow remembering to pick up Lister's bazookoid before kicking open the hatch and charging down to Starbug's lower levels. Through corridors he runs, the tortured ship shuddering and tearing itself apart around him. A corridor section collapses and a huge bulkhead crashes down onto his hard-light back, but Rimmer is oblivious to the pain, one thought blotting out all consciousness, he must reach the time drive. Suddenly, he's standing in front of it. Rimmer raises the bazookoid. Lobes. Fires. Incandescent light blasts from the ruptured drive, but our perspective shifts into space, where a streak of red fire plows into the battered ship. This time, no resistance remains. Starbug loses its fragile grip on coherency and detonates utterly, with an explosion that matches a thousand Death Stars. When the debris clears and the light fades, Starbug is gone. There is no indication that there was ever anything there. Cut back to Lister making his recording.
We were no match, they killed us, and destroyed everything on board ship including the time drive, which meant there was no time drive for them to have in the future, to bring back into the past, destroy the future of their past selves in the present. Put simply, by killing us they killed themselves, because once we were dead it was impossible for us to become them in the future, and return in time to kill ourselves in the past, even though it was the present.
As Lister's speech draws to a close the camera begin to emit a buzzing noise. Suddenly it hisses, throws out sparks and blows up. Enter Crichton.
Oh, smack.
Have you been trying to explain about our future selves again, Commissar?
I just thought I'd give it one more go.
Ah, that's the third camera this week. The machines just can't take it, sir.
But I'm only trying to explain why Starbug's damaged, despite the timeline being erased, cause this reality's unstable, and anomalies have merged from both dimensions to cope with the paradox.
Oh. Garbled, confusing, and quite frankly duller than an in-flight magazine produced by Air Belgium. Now just state our position and explain we're down on supplies.
Kriven leaves.
Alright. Alright.
Starbug flies by a planet and its orbiting moon. A Starbug console room. Camera crackles to life, showing Lister present, seated in front of console.
This is Dave Lister of the JMC Transport Vehicle Starbug. We're down on supplies, we need help. Out.
Camera crackles off. Camera crackles on.
By the way, we're in space. Passed a sort of ready moon a couple of days ago. Coordinates enclosed.
Lister taps at a keyboard, then holds up his fingers in an O shape.
It's about that shape. You can't miss it.
Four model shot of Starbug flying through space.
Ship's log, update, Friday, The battle with our future selves has had the most terrible consequences.
Starbug's leaping quarters. Crichton, Lister present. Closed washit.
Wiped out. Crichton, man, they can't be.
I'm afraid so, sir. The laser cannon breached the main water tank and flooded supply deck B. They didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, but surely...
There was nothing we could do to save them, sir.
So, now we've got no papadums at all?
No papadums, no curries. All the Indian food supplies have been totaled.
Lister sags down, clutching his guitar for security.
He'll have to survive without them, then he'll have salads.
Sir, you're in shock. You don't know what you're saying.
After all, it's only curry.
Only curry. The enormity of it has sunk in. You must mourn, sir. Don't you see? You must mourn.
Curries.
Ah, sir, get it out. Cry like a baby.
What am I gonna do? Curry night was the one little beacon I had made me feel like a normal ordinary guy, not some sad freak stuck in deep space. No woman, no hope, no curry.
Worse still, a choice of only two alcoholic beverages, Cinzano or Advocate. It's a human tragedy.
No lager.
Sir, there is nothing unmanly in howling like a hungry prairie dog.
No lager.
Crichton, all the supplies on deck were destroyed, sir. There wasn't even any wreckage, no debris, zip.
Got a few beers and a curry, it was the highlight of my week.
I used to look forward to curry night too, sir. Seeing your little face all happy and smiling, come rain or shine, we'll always make time for curry night. Every Friday.
Saturday.
Sunday.
Tuesday.
Wednesday.
Thursday. Always the same meal, three papadums with mango chutney.
Those little onions.
Dill pickle.
That dayglo green mint sauce that just doesn't wash out.
The red stuff that no one knows what it is.
Then a shamey kebab starter.
Followed by a chicken vindaloo, kamikaze hot, with a fire extinguisher on standby.
And two scoops of coffee ice cream.
And two indigestion tablets.
Lister sighs heavily.
Life without curry. It's like Laurel without Hardy, the Lone Ranger without that Indian bloke.
Perhaps you could learn to love pasta.
Pasta? You sick?
Starbuck flies between a planet and its orbiting moon. Starbuck cockpit. Cat, Crichton, Rimmer present at stations. Cat and Rimmer each wear a black armband. Enter Lister.
You know the news. All the curry supplies have been destroyed. We heard. As a mark of respect, we thought on Sunday at 12 o'clock we could have a minute's flatulence. It's nothing to you guys, is it? It's changing my life.
Sirs, the altercation with our future selves caused dimensional anomalies which have expanded the cargo deck by 212%. We should ascertain that the new structure is stable.
All present. They stand at the entrance to the now enormous cargo deck B, gently sloping, ridged walls bevel outwards then curl back in, rising to a ceiling that towers above them, effectively forming a huge, flat-bottom cylinder. The back wall of the deck is an ethereal, corrugated blue construction, and the floor is lost in thick mist which rises to their knees. They begin to walk slowly through the deck.
So let me get this straight, time has returned to the point before we discovered the time drive, right? So what's to stop us going back on board the Gemini 12 and picking it up all over again?
We have to avoid all forms of time travel. It's the only way of breaking our destiny line and ensuring we don't end up like our future selves.
Yeah, but surely we can use the time drive if we're careful. You know, if we don't abuse it the way our future selves did. You know, if we're sensible and mature.
And do what?
Go back in time to an Indian takeaway and order 500 curries.
Sir, the scheme is irresponsible, moronic, and preposterous.
All your hallmarks, bud.
Look, one really big takeaway order once every 2 years and our problems are over.
Your problems are over? Our problems are just beginning.
What about causality? Interfering in the past no matter how minutely always alters the present. Cause and effect.
Look, I'm a curryaholic. I've only got two taste buds that work. I need curry, period. We can't afford to take any more chances. I say the time drive stays where it is.
You know I'd rather wear Sidious wrist flares and a clip and polyester tie than agree with goalpost head, but this time he's right.
Oh, okay, period, okay.
Somewhere within the newly expanded decks of Starbuck, all enter, climbing down a ladder positioned in front of a huge, backlit convection fan whose blades whirl lazily. The dwarfers begin to walk along another cylindrical corridor.
Since that completes the deck inspection, sirs, permission to offline for the next 12 hours while I discard some old cache files.
How come you need more memory? Over the years, you've had more RAM than a field of sheep.
My head is littered with unnecessary information, sir. The ability to sing the Bay City Roller's greatest hits is no longer a priority. For most cultural purposes, crooning Bye Bye Baby is more than sufficient.
This cleanup thing, how does it work exactly?
I simply attach my RAM to the ship's computer and download the unwanted files into its trash file.
Your RAM's in your head, isn't it? So you won't actually be using your body, then?
Why do you ask?
Just interested. Robotics, it's fascinating, isn't it?
All exit. Night. Starbuck's sleeping quarters. Lister present. His alarm suddenly warbles, and Lister wakes and silences it. Accompanied by tense Indiana Jones-style music, he quickly climbs out of bed and leaves. A Starbuck console room. Crichton present, sitting comatose at a computer console, his head is connected to the console by a flexible spiral-twirled cord like that of a phone handset. Lister sneaks in, carrying a white plastic bag which he places on a desk. He then unscrews Crichton's head, wire still attached, and sets it down, then unwraps the spare head he brought with him and unscrews it onto Crichton's body. Crichton's eyes pop open.
My heavens, Imhead.
Lister clamps a hand over Crichton's mouth and pulls the chair away from the desk so that Crichton, his arms flailing as he is wheeled back, can see him.
SHH. It's only temporary.
I don't understand.
Look, I want to go back in time on Akari Hunt. Crichton said no way, what do you say?
I can't go behind Crichton's head, what would he say if he found out? It's deceitful, wrong, and dishonest.
Crichton pauses, glances around conspiratorially.
Amen. Those are emotions I have longed to experience, but first, you'll have to override my guilt chip and disable my behavior protocols.
Okay, show me how.
Press the skull release catch behind my right ear.
Lister flips up a panel of Crichton's head and props it up like the bonnet of a car.
Okay, here we go.
Short, he eases out a black cylindrical unit and unclips a small piece from it, placing it in a kidney bowl.
My guilt chip. No behavior protocols, just call me badass.
Starbuck does a flyby between two planets. Rimmer, Cat present, seated at the table, Rimmer engrossed with notes on a clipboard. Crichton stands nearby, with an Egwisk attachment plugged into his grinal socket. Enter Lister.
Hey, that smells good, what's for brekkie?
Waffles, sir. Dripping in honey and jam, with three fried eggs on the side, coated in cheese.
That sounds about as healthy as jumping off a cliff.
Healthy? Who cares? Pork away.
Crichton punctuates this last with a pelvic thrust, then gyrates his hips from side to side until his dangling attachment has enough swing to reach his hand, whereupon he proceeds to whisk the three peas, liquid flying everywhere.
So, Crichton, now that you've had time to think, what about that Akari Hunt of the 22nd century?
Ooh, I meant to mention that, yes. I overeaked it yesterday. On reflection, I think it'd be quite safe.
Crichton takes out a small packet from his attachment belt.
Safe?
What about causality?
Causality? Well, okay, you know, one event causes another, okay, but sometimes, you're just gonna say, the laws of time and space. Who gives a smack?
As Lister begins to speak, Crichton takes what is obviously a cigarette from the packet and lights up. Okay, I think what Crichton's trying to say is Uncle,
you're smoking.
Oh, is my generator overheating again?
A cigarette?
Do you want one?
Of course I don't want one.
Do you want me to go outside?
I think what Crichton's trying to say is that it's okay to go back in time and order a small lake's worth of Vindaloo to go. Isn't that right?
You bet your ass.
Okay, so let's navigate those unreality bubbles into it. Crichton, can I have a word?
Exit Lister, leaving Crichton by the grinal attachment into Starbuck Galley. Crichton, Lister enter.
What is wrong with you? You don't smoke, you never say bet your ass, and you never use your grinal attachment to stir anybody's tea.
I didn't get any error commands.
Because you've got no behavior protocols, you spanner. Now get a grip or we'll be rumpled.
Lister punctuates with Crichton's egg whisk, of which Crichton gives a defiant spin. Exit Lister.
So uptight.
Crichton picks up a Cinzano Banco bottle and swigs down its contents. A corridor aboard the Gemini 12. Enter Crichton, Rimmer, Lister, Cat, the latter two in space suits. They pick their way through a decaying and decrepit corridor. Crichton leads the group, enthusiastically humming an in-your-face type of song. Exit Crichton.
What is wrong with that demented Tonka Toy now? He's got a bit of a bio glitch in his transponder calibrations. It's only temporary.
Gemini engine room. They arrive in a small, box-shaped room. On the back wall is a big gash which offers a panoramic view of the planet around which the Gemini 12 orbits. A bank of machinery is fitted on another wall of the room.
Hey, mister. Time to rev.
Lister crosses to the machinery and pulls a piece out. Somehow, probably the result of another interdimensional anomaly, the time drive has become a handheld unit, which Lister now hands to Crichton.
Okay, Crichton, we want the Taj Mahal Tandoori restaurant behind the JMC building in London. Back table, quiet.
I'll need a moment to acquaint myself with the controls.
But you've used it before.
Have I?
Crichton receives a discreet thump from Lister.
Oh, yes, of course I have. Sorry. How stupid of me. I'm just programming it now, Maddie boy.
Crichton taps buttons on the controller. Day. Broadway in an American city. Montage. Crowds pack the street and the surrounding buildings, cheering and waving, ticker tape filling the air. A large entourage is rolling down the street, police and security vehicles surrounding a pentapluma which has small flags fluttering from its fenders. A well-dressed man sits in the back seat with his attractive wife to his left, both waving at the crowds. Scene cuts to a man, alone in a storeroom of some kind. He has a gun, a high-power rifle, into which he lobs around. He takes careful and steady aim at the man in the car, and loses two shots in quick succession. Panic breaks out below, security men rush towards the limo, while the man quickly reloads. He aims his third shot, but just before he fires, four bolts of crackling red lightning coalesce into the forms of four people. Two are dressed in silver space suits, one a strange chunky costume, the last in a comparatively normal uniform. One of the spacesuited figures steps back to catch his balance, knocking the gunman headfirst out of the window and sending his third shot wild. Lister and Cat remove their helmets, all oblivious to the recently departed gunman.
Nice landing, Crichton, that was about as smooth as an Egyptian whiskey.
Apologies, sir, I'm not sure what I did then.
This isn't right, where are we?
Well, according to the time drive, the date is November the 22nd, 1963, and we're in the city of Dallas.
How come? Give that thing.
The gunman, who managed to grab the sill of the window while falling, is trying to climb back up. Shot of his fingertips inching over the sill.
I've always been a bit of a technical whiz when it comes to these kinds of gizmos.
Cat bangs the drive off the open window which drops down and traps the gunman's fingers.
HMM, Dallas, 63, no doubt about it.
Scene cuts to outside the building. Sirens are wailing in the street below. After freeing his fingers, the gunman climbs up onto the ledge and tries to raise the window. Cut back inside.
Dallas, wasn't that place where that American king got assassinated?
JFK!
No, it was John something, not Jeff K.
JFK, not Jeff K, you gimpoid, like the airport. I did a paper on him at school.
I wonder why anyone would want to name their kid after an airport.
The airport was named after the president.
All right.
Scene again cuts to outside the building. The gunman inches along the wall to the right of the jammed window, bending to try two more but failing to open him. As he straightens up, he almost loses his footing, and after calming himself, he pulls some cable running along the wall under the windows and ties it around himself. Cut back to interior.
Where did this gunman dude shoot from anyway?
Well, if my histochip serves me correctly, the gunman's location was in the Texas Book Depository.
As Cat wanders away, Crichton suddenly does a double take as he notices the floor-to-ceiling piles of boxes stamped, Texas Book Depository. The gunman inches back past the jammed window towards the second open window further along, which is in the same room as the one the dwarfers stand in.
It was probably from this very window.
What do you reckon?
Lister opens the window that Lee Harvey Oswald shot from and peers out, just as Oswald climbs through the other window. Lister notices the cable and tugs on it experimentally.
Hey, what's this? Hey, there's something on the end of this. Give us a hand.
Oblivious to the man just across the room from them, the dwarfers tug on the cable, pulling Oswald back out of the window and Lister with him.
Pull, everyone, or I'm in trouble.
The dwarfers each take hold of the cable as in tug-of-war, but they are still yanked forward. Lister piles into the raised window panes, the others colliding with each other, and loses his grip on the cable. Unbeknownst to the dwarfers, Oswald falls five stories down to street level.
Hey, what's going on down there? What are all those people doing gathered around that giant pizza?
That is not a giant pizza, sir.
It's 8 foot across, man, don't you think that's giant? What kind of pizza house have you been going to? The Fat Pastoria.
Hey, look at this.
Cat has found the rifle dropped by Oswald. The others see her and Cat brings the rifle with him as he looks down at the street.
I think we just pulled the gunman out of the window.
As the implications begin to sink into the dwarfers, the door to their room suddenly bursts open and two armed men, one a policeman, the other in a suit, charge in.
FBI. Drop the gun.
Don't shoot.
Hands on heads.
Lister, Rimmer, and Crichton follow instructions. Cat, however, covers the much more important ground area.
You are hereby charged with the murder of Lee Harvey Oswald, who valiantly tried to foil your attempt to assassinate the president. Thanks to Mr. Oswald, the president is alive but wounded.
They notice the time drive.
What is that? Some kind of weapon? Kick it over here.
Crichton moves to comply, but instead deftly taps commands into the unit with his boot. Red lightning carries their forms from where they, and after a moment of confusion, the two armed men level their guns and fire, bullets breezing through the recently vacated air with only milliseconds to spare. To the side of the astounded officers, a spacesuit helmet carelessly left on a box also crackles with lightning and disappears. The officers succeeding only in slamming bullets into a box which supported the helmet. The perspective shifts. It's the same room, but the FBI agent and the cop are gone.
Ah, nice one, Chris.
Where are we?
It says 1966. I must have prodded us forward 3 years.
At least it gave us time to analyze the original error.
Hey, there's nobody here. The entire city's deserted.
Day. A deserted, abandoned street. All present. They are walking slowly along a wide, pleasant street which is completely devoid of any signs of life. Abandoned vehicles line the side of the road, and a breeze blows old litter around. In the back of one of the cars is a discarded newspaper. Its headline reads, Millions Flee from American Cities. It's like a scene from The Stand.
I don't understand it. All we did is save Kennedy's life.
Is that bad? What kind of a dude was he?
He was a fine man.
Day. A deserted, abandoned street scene cuts to a street further on in the city. All is the same as in the previous street, with one exception. The dead body of a man lies undisturbed on the pavement. All enter. Cat leaving.
Look.
Can you get anything for us from his scent?
Cat sniffs along the man's body.
Male.
He sniffs again.
Mid-30s.
It looks like he was trampled to death in some kind of stampede.
As they speak, Crichton notices a crumpled newspaper poking out from the man's suit. He picks it up and begins to scan it.
Just processing.
Crichton's eyes flick quickly over the text.
I'll reroute the results through my chest monitor. President Kennedy was impeached in 1964 for sharing a mistress with mafia boss Sam Giancana. It was the biggest scandal in American history. Kennedy was sentenced to 3 years in an open prison in July, 65. J. Edgar Hoover became president. He was forced to run by the mob, who had pictures of him at a transvestite orgy.
So America had a president controlled by the mafia.
Soon after the election, the USSR were allowed to install a nuclear base in Cuba in return for mafia cocaine trafficking between Cuba and the States. With the Soviet nuclear base 30 miles from the US mainland, people fled from all the major cities.
The dwarfers leave the body and continue along the street.
So am I right in thinking I could get a major nuclear explosion all over this suit? Cosim telling you guys, that stuff does not dry clean.
Back to Starbuck.
Starbuck isn't there. It doesn't exist.
What?
How come?
Best guess, Kennedy's impeachment in 64 traumatized the American nation, allowing the USSR to win the space race. In this reality, it was probably the Russians who were the first to land on the moon.
So we're marooned.
How was I supposed to know that Chicken Vindel was going to cause all this?
But you guys said Kennedy was a great press.
He was.
He was also an inveterate womanizer. His affairs were legendary. They never came out when he was alive.
Every man has his weak spot, his Achilles heel.
Kennedy's was just higher up.
If it known this was gonna happen, it'd have had an ex-army and finished the Cinzano. Crichton, what have I done, man?
Well, you've brought the 20th century to the very brink of extinction, sir. Gum.
What is wrong with you? Where is your compassion? You've got about as much warmth as a service station chip. That's right, you've no behavior protocols, have you?
And you thought causality didn't matter? Every action we take has trillions of implications. How come you forgot that?
Well, I didn't forget, sir. I just didn't care, period. I've got no guilt.
At this, Lister realizes the game is up.
Ah, I nicked Crichton's body. That spare head too. I removed his guilt chip.
You have altered the entire course of civilization from the 20th century onwards. You've brought the world to the brink of nuclear war, and worst of all...
I know, I still haven't had a curry.
No, worst of all, the time drive has frozen.
Let me see.
Rimmer takes the drive and gives it a cursory examination.
Do you think it's because the subspace conduits have locked with the transponder calibrations and caused a major tachyon surge that has overloaded the time matrix?
Ah, no, sir, I've just been jabbing it too hard.
So what now?
We need to have time to figure out how to unfreeze it. I suggest we set up camp here for the night and perhaps Crichton can go and look for some food.
I'm on my way, sir.
Night. Around a campfire. Lister, Crichton, Rimmer and Cat present, sitting around a large open fire. Rimmer is fiddling with the time drive while Lister and Cat, having ditched this passesips, tuck into hefty chunks of meat.
It's hopeless, I can't fix it. We're trapped.
Rimmer drops the time drive down by the edge of the fire.
Chicken's good.
Yeah, really good.
That's not chicken, sir.
Oh, what is it?
It's that man we found.
Lister and Cat suddenly stop chewing, their mouthfuls of meat turning to poison.
Well, it seems such a waste to leave him lying there when had barbecue so beautifully. Did I do wrong? I didn't get any error commands.
Lister and Cat let their half-chewed mouthfuls dribble out in disgust.
Obviously I thought about it, because without my guilt chip or moral imperatives, I have nothing to guide me. But it seemed to me that if humanoids eat chicken then obviously they'd eat their own species, otherwise they'd just be picking on the chicken.
1 minute you're down, the next you're right back up again. I said I wasn't playing. I knew it did smell like-
person out of my teeth.
Where to?
Hawaii. Let's catch some surf.
No, no, we've got to go back. Stop ourselves from interfering with the assassination.
I don't care where we go, just as long as it's before we had dinner.
25th floor storeroom inside the Texas Book Depository. All present sat together around a box of books playing poker. Tense music plays, and a clock on the wall shows the time as 1:27 p.m. Enter Oswald. Crichton, with his back to the world gunman, shields the angles of his head with one hand. Oswald, upon spotting the dwarfers, uses the long case he carries on his shoulder to awkwardly cover his face.
Decorators. Try up on the 6th floor.
Exit Oswald. With the gunman gone, the dwarfers move to the window to view the street.
Stand back, sir. Our original selves are about to beam in. When they realize their mistake, they'll beam out again. I propose we go down to the 4th.
21 4th floor storeroom inside the Texas Book Depository. All enter. A room very similar to that up on the 5th. From outside we hear a gunshot, and the dwarfers rush to the window.
First shot.
A second and third shot rings out. Again, there is noise and commotion from the street below.
It doesn't smell right. I think he's missed.
How come?
He's right, sir. By sending Oswald up to the 6th, we've made the trajectory of his shot so steep he's only wounded him.
Let's start again and bring him back down to the 5th.
We can't use the 5th. Our original selves are destined to beam in there as he fires his third shot, and this version of us are now on the 4th.
We've been copied more times than that poster of the tennis girl scratching her butt.
If we could arrange, somehow, for a second gunman to fire from just behind that little hill over there covered in lawn.
You mean, the grassy knoll, sir.
That's all of it, world it.
Shoot the press. Who?
You can count me out.
And me.
Hang on, maybe, just maybe there's someone who can get us out of this mess.
Where are we going?
Idlewild Airport, July, 65.
Day runway at Idlewild Airport. We see a handcuffed JFK being led down the stairs from a plane and loaded into the back of a prison truck. As police lock up the truck, the dwarfers beam in, nearby the stationary aircraft.
This is right. He's being escorted to Hoover Open Prison in New York. Give me 5 minutes, period.
Lister manipulates the drive, and the red lightning beams him out. JFK's prison truck enter Lister, beamed in by the time drive to the bench seat opposite JFK.
Don't be alarmed, sir, but I have a very strange tale to tell.
I have had plenty of time to reflect on my deeds in the White House. In all important respects, I believe I did a good job. It was right to plan a pull out of Vietnam, to fight for civil rights, and, to fight Congress, to put a man on the moon. It was, wrong, however, to, act like an irresponsible jackass with all those women, and allow my enemies to wreak havoc on our nation.
But I can help, man. I mean, Mr. President, man. I mean, sir.
How, can you help?
Well, come with us back to Dallas, November 1963, be a second gunman. The gunman behind the grassy knoll.
You mean, assassinate myself?
Yeah. It drives the conspiracy nuts crazy, but they'll never figure it out.
But I, still have a future here. Jackie left me, but, when I get out I can, still make a contribution to the world.
See this airport, Idlewild Airport? In our reality they renamed it JFK, after you. Where I come from, you're a liberal icon, and that's the person you should be. If you're gonna be that person, you're gonna have to sacrifice your life.
And only then will my reputation be restored in history.
And I can get us making curry.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Hey, that make a pretty neat speech, that.
It did. Heh heh. Day. Behind the grassy knoll in Dallas, 1963. All present. JFK present, he and Crichton dressed in policemen's uniforms. JFK swallows the last of his bottle of Coke and sets it down. Lister hands him what looks like an M16 rifle and nods towards the street meaningfully. Montage. We see the parade roll through the main street once again, Oswald lining up his shot from the 6th floor of the Texas Book Depository and JFK tracking his own vehicle as it moves slowly down the road. Oswald fires his first two shots, wounding the president as before. This time, however, Kennedy himself takes aim from the grassy knoll, firing his shot moments after Oswald's third, and leaving what would turn out to be a nasty mess on Jackie Oss's suit. Kennedy lowers the gun and turns away, clearly disturbed, but unreadable beyond that. Command error in parameter. I thank you all for giving me the opportunity to, be reborn. JFK walks slowly away from them towards a line of parked cars. After a short time, he fades from reality. The dwarfers turn away, leaning against a high fence that looks out onto the street.
Smack! I forgot to ask if there are any curry houses in Dallas.
Cat, Rimmer, and Crichton exchange glances. Cat makes a subtle gesture with his head and Crichton nods. After all, there's only so much you can take of one person. Cat turns and walks behind Lister, whistling innocently. As Rimmer turns to follow him, he suddenly grabs Lister and pulls him to the ground. The three of them quickly laying into the cur depraved one with everything they've got. The nightstick that Crichton carries come in particularly useful. End of Ticket to Ride.